With a career in medicine, you work really hard to get into it, and you do it all for the right reasons. You study hard, you get your registration, and that's it. But what if you want more? It can feel isolating. Have I wasted my time? Am I cut out for this? Surely there's more to it. Am I alone? It turns out you're not alone, because there are thousands of other doctors and medical professionals that are just like you, and they're all part of the Creative Careers in Medicine community. CCIM has a free online community, resources, and their flagship annual conference, which I'm at today, called Meet Me in the Metaverse. And in this episode, I'm at Brighton Beach in Sydney, and I speak to just a handful of the amazing clinicians that are here to inspire others to follow their own path in medicine. To learn more about CCIM, make sure you visit their website, and also check out their podcast, which is part of the Talking Health Tech Podcast Network. If you didn't know, CCIM is a community of doctors and health professionals who believe that your career in medicine should be whatever you want it to be, not what you're told it should be. Collaboration starts with the conversation, Team Health Tech. Let's make it happen. Between now and the end of June, we're conducting the 2024 Talking Health Tech Audience Survey. This helps us prioritize content, hone in key messages, and refine the show to make it even better. We also want to understand who the biggest cohorts of our audience are. So I'd love for you to take 5 or 10 minutes to have your say and complete the survey. Everyone who completes it goes in the draw to win a share of $1,000 worth of THT Plus membership credits to put towards a membership for yourself as an individual, or to help get the word out about your company. The link to complete the survey is in the show notes of this episode, or just go to talkinghealthtech.com/survey.
Welcome to Talking Health Tech, featuring content and community about technology and healthcare. We acknowledge the traditional owners of lands these conversations were recorded and pay respect to elders past and present.
My name is Cheryl Martin. I am currently based in Victoria. I do get around. I have been fortunate to live, work and play in a number of states in our beautiful country, and you probably can detect a bit of Scozzy. I wanted to ask Simon about voice-activated technology and the evolution of that for the Scottish accent, actually. So I think that's probably still a work in progress.
But
I originally hail from Scotland. I did most of my advanced emergency training here in Australia.
Yeah, and what do you do now? What keeps you busy?
So I am still a practicing emergency physician, but I probably have, and that's probably the reason I'm at this conference, have spent several years now doing a number of other things. I have gone off piste through my career, and I particularly am interested in our colleagues and how we sustain our talent and nurture that in healthcare, because they're the ones showing up to do the work for our patients, and that has led me to do a number of things. It has led me overseas to look at people who are maybe perhaps doing this differently and maybe better in some respects. I think we heard from Dr. Methan Richards this morning, our first chief wellness officer here in Australia. I followed her to Stanford a couple of years later. It'd be really interesting to kind of learn from Mr. Teach, Annafelt, and people like that in the US. Lots of examples of pockets of excellent practice here. I think that has really guided the kind of next part of my journey. I'm the current chair of our first inaugural workforce wellbeing executive in the Emergency Medicine College. Again, pro bono work and a lot of work to do, as we heard this morning, a lot of challenges. But I think there's a lot of opportunity here. We actually have 4 of our executive members here, which is really good. I could learn a lot from you about podcasting. I did start a podcast after being a fan of podcasts right from At the very beginning, I would say that first generation in the early 2000s, and we might get to talk about that tomorrow, so I'm quite excited about that. And, you know, particularly to learn from all the experts in the room. Again, everything is a work in progress, but I think that's the beauty of a space and a conference and a tribe like this. And I'm going to say that I do feel at home here, and I feel like I'm part of my tribe. But that has really allowed me to open up, you know, many of the conversations where people were having in corridors. You know, we do talk about big system and culture change. And I think that, again, we've got to learn from the pockets of excellence. And, you know, I'm increasingly encouraged by the conversations that are happening in the rooms where they need to happen. Yeah. But I think the real voices that we need to elevate and the real skills and talent that we need to nurture are all of us here. And, you know, what we do on the clinic floor each day.
So one, like, I saw your panel, and you're speaking a few times at this conference, which is great. But in that panel that you kind of alluded to earlier, I found it interesting that, you know, particularly a question, I think it was from the audience around, well, you know, it's great that some of these initiatives exist, but you really need that kind of executive buy-in at the top. But then it's also, you've got a lot of the, and it's great to say in practice, but then you've got a lot of the realities of medicine, I guess, or the realities of what needs to happen to logistically run a hospital or a clinic or whatever it might be. What would you hope that perhaps people here, like many on the front line, but also many are in quite influential positions as well, would be able to take away through that lens on the wellness piece that you were on earlier? Because we're in a lot of people have worked very hard to get to this point and might be at a crossroads of deciding, well, should I go this way or should I stick the path? What would you hope people take away, particularly through that wellness lens?
So I think that is a hard question. It's a good question. It's the right question. I think I maybe said it earlier that on any given day, at any given moment, we actually have to look after yourself and those around you. And so I'm always going to start there because change and progress is happening. It's coming, but it's not coming quick enough. And I'm an emergency physician. I'm impatient by nature. I've got to remind myself of that. I've got to remind myself there's a lot of repetition in this process, and there's also iteration. So it's repeat, 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 iterate. And I think, you know, many of us sound like broken records. I think that the people that do have some, we all, you know, we've talked a lot about power and privilege and permission and opportunity to influence. I think if you can take some of the conversations that you have today and maybe just start, you know, start with one or two big things. I think even if you're leading a chief well-being officer role, we'll take that as an example, a role like Fenton's. You can't be all things to all people. I mean, she mentioned she had a fractional role. That job is already 1+ FTE in addition to another role. And I think you've got to remember that there's so many people doing things off the side of your desk. So you've got to pick one or two good things. And, you know, I'm going to talk about a really excellent example this afternoon, you know, that pocket of excellence. When you have a pocket of enlightened leadership that really engages with their workforce to come up with ideas, because everybody has ideas. They've got ideas to get rid of stupid stuff. I really like that concept. And they also have one or two things that really would make a difference to them in their practice environment and their patient interactions, and make a difference for them and their patients. And so if you can build something into the system to enable that, so something like the DMO manifest. So we've talked a lot about the very basics of material offerings today. You know, those workforce conditions. We are still, you know, that is actually really quite depressing to think of the state of affairs that we have. But when you see an example where, you know, an organization is really struggling, they're 25% debt deficit in their junior medical rosters, they're spending millions on locums, their training survey, you know, we've got some data to support that this is not a place people want to be in and train. Had the word toxic culture used a couple of times this morning. But if you could then say, well, what do you actually need? Maybe we need part-time and flexible working opportunities. Maybe we need paid overtime. Maybe we need childcare on site. Maybe we need parking. All the very basics. But if you can say, well, actually, we're going to give you all of that. And we have seen this happen in very recent times here in Australia. And they see 100% capacity in a roster. We've seen, even before, people say culture change is slow. But we've seen people on the ground say, I even knew people just seem happier even before we had the data to say, oh, actually, this is now the training place of choice. And what else can we do on the back of that? We started with this. What else can we do? Can we look at bolstering supports for junior staff out of hours? can we look at our sick leave rosters?
Yeah.
You know, what can we do next? What can we do together? And it, you know, I think value-based care and co-design keeps coming up again and again. I think we're going to hear more and more and more about this.
Yeah.
I see the co-design and the creativity. That is all here.
That's in the way, yeah. And I love that it kind of ties in a little bit too in, I think it was mentioned on your panel as well, is that, you know, don't be discouraged in the event that, you know, if you, I'm paraphrasing here, but you invite 100 people but only half a dozen show up, there's an opportunity to impact a very small few. And kind of tying in with what you said is that if you can plant those seeds, maybe get the small wins or demonstrate or change the vibe in a little bit way, that then gives you something to work from that maybe takes something that may seem very unattainable and big and fluffy into something that's more actionable and tangible, and then you've got the runs on the board to be able to continue to deliver on results.
And I think just on that, and I was at an International Women's Day panel yesterday. I had one of my colleagues reminding me, you know, if you can't be it, you can't see it. So that is perfect. This is a fertile ground to actually see people who are doing things a bit differently and thinking a bit differently. And I think the other thing, when you step up to have a conversation, I think many of my colleagues particularly advocate for, you know, particularly in the doctor's mental health space. Dr. George Toogood is well recognised in this capacity. It takes a lot of energy to step up and give a talk and be vulnerable and actually share an experience. But he will always say to me, if there is one person in this room that this talk helps, then it's kind of worth it.
Sure.
I think about, I don't quite have the slick skill set of you in the podcast. I spend too many hours on that. really, really too many hours. Daily on the editing.
Yeah, yeah. And you know,
still a bit precious about it. And I really should try and delegate that.
Oh, no.
It is. And I like listening to the conversations again.
Yeah.
But I had a colleague reach out to me from the UK a couple of months ago, and we haven't spoken since we were medical students. I always thought a lot of him, and he's not somebody who would give, like, reach out. He was always, I think he was always the one, the top of the class, very, you know, but in a very measured, you know, way that I really had a lot of silent respect for. And he is in a senior role now, supervisor of training. And he just reached out and he said, look, Cheryl, I want to thank you for the time and the effort that you put into the podcast. I share this with all my junior colleagues, and things are really bad in the UK right now. And, you know, it kind of just reminded you, that is kind of why.
Yeah.
That is why. And it's not a big, again, we need to keep chipping away. I think although my lens is still trying to be at that macroscopic view now, in the moment, that those individuals matter. And you know, how do we support each other?
Yeah.
And a lot of that is about community. Those are the ABCs. I'm an emergency physician. I can get right a good ABC framework. Autonomy, belonging, and contribution. And, you know, I think the community piece of that and the why and the contribution. And that is a lot of why we actually went into Chapman-Edson.
Amazing.
The Talking Health Tech podcast has evolved a lot over the years, all based on audience feedback. Now I need your help. Yes, you, to shape the future of this show. Between now and the end of June, we're running our biggest campaign to date in order to understand what makes the global healthcare ecosystem tick. Last time we ran our Talking Health Tech audience survey, we learnt 40% of our audience are clinicians, 77% of our audience tune in for professional development and market awareness, 8% of people listen to Talking Health Tech for competitor profiling, and only 2% of people listen to the podcast to fall asleep. And this time around, I can't wait to find out about your preferences for audio versus video content, which topics we should dive into more, preferences for hosts and formats and geographical reach and so much more. And don't worry, we'll be sharing all the insights once all the responses are collected as well. So if you're a supporter of Talking Health Tech and you can spare 5 or 10 minutes, please complete our 2024 audience survey. And to say thanks for your input, everyone who completes the survey goes into the draw to win a share of $1,000 worth of credits towards THT Plus membership. Go to talkinghealthtech.com/survey or the links in the show notes of this episode as well.
I'm Carly Bellini. I'm a doctor, entrepreneur, business person, and I'm a coach. And a lot of the work that I do, P, is working on people's inner voice. A lot of people that build an outwardly successful yet inwardly unfulfilled career.
Yep.
See that in a lot of doctors, a lot of people in healthcare. And I try and help these people connect the dots, recognize the source code bugs, and debug them.
Yeah. And look, I mean, this is the place to do a lot of that debugging, I guess, or those that might be interested in doing that at the Creative Careers in Medicine conference. But I've known you for quite a while, but yeah. It was just great to be able to have that the keynote that you did at the start. Talk to me a little bit about where like motivation behind that.
Yeah, so there's a bunch of different things. One is, as I mentioned, it was like me serving myself as my first customer.
Yeah,
I realized that when you grow up, and my view of the world is very much people. There's a genetic component to personality, but there's a genetic component to your emotional makeup in the way you view things, whether you're more feeling, whether you're more data oriented. And then the environment that you get raised in has a significant impact on that. And you see a lot of people in healthcare, they grow up with a relatively conservative view of the world, a lot around linear pathways, ticking boxes. And these people are often latent creatives, had a lot of creative pursuits when they were younger. And it sort of gets driven out of them in the training in whatever medical specialty or healthcare field that you're in. Mm. And then on the journey that progresses. And people often feel like they get stuck in this field and they've got something that they actually want to work in. So there's that side of it. The other part is early on in my career, I spent a fair bit of time living in Silicon Valley, and I was at a Google NASA-sponsored program, Singularity University, and I saw that the world actually changes exponentially.
Mm.
It doesn't change linearly. And we're seeing that now with AI. And like, we were talking about this in 2011.
Mm.
And I see that so many people, it's not just in healthcare, it's in the world, they've got a linear framing of the world and a linear framing of themselves. Yeah. And it's like when you actually cut to what it is, it's like actually the world doesn't change linearly.
Yeah.
We've got errors in what we think and what we believe. And if you can identify that, you can really maximize your potential and your output in your life.
I think what you do well is to because there's so much nodding that goes on during your sessions.
Normally,
people go, oh, that resonates with me. But it's about a topic that feels so, not nebulous, but difficult to quantify. It just feels like you're a little bit lost, alone, and kind of not really sure what to do with all these things, particularly in when you've been on a pathway that's so, I guess, I'm going to assume structured or like, yeah, this is the direction I'm going. There's a lot of clinicians, I imagine, that might be, doesn't have to be clinicians, people on a set pathway in terms of their profession that feel a bit lost. They can't kind of reconcile those feelings that you mentioned in terms of I'm kicking all these goals, you know, on paper, but it's just not giving me that fulfillment. So it's nice about it. You do so well in quantifying that. But then the important thing is like kind of what you do with that now. I think that's the kind of...
Yeah, well, thank you for saying that. And an interesting insight that I know is if you look at what people post online and what you repost and what you share and what you comment on, people really only do it where it increases their social capital.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
So say I've done certain posts on LinkedIn where I was like, it's really impressive how many people build a life that they don't want and then stay in it. And it doesn't get that much engagement in the comments or the likes. I get a lot of profile views.
Yeah.
So the thing is, it's like, it's really interesting that I think, because people are hesitant to share this.
Yeah.
Because like, whether you're prominent, whether you're not prominent, it doesn't matter. Whoever you are, whatever you're doing, sometimes it feels very vulnerable to share, you know, well, I feel a bit lost.
Yeah.
I'm not sure what to do, especially if you're innovating in tech.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, tech is obviously now is like a lot more mainstream than it was.
Yeah.
But every new idea is at the fringe of some existing field.
Yes.
And it can get very lonely. Building that as a founder, building that as a technologist, whatever. So you have to have the belief in you and yourself to be able to do that. And sometimes that gets hard over time to keep that up.
That's true. Hey, look, lastly as well, look, you do such a great job in terms of delivering a lot of value for people. You mentioned you're a coach and that's kind of all you do about it. So I'm actually going to give you the opportunity. Like, who are the types of people that you coach or who the other way around? Who should be reaching out to you in terms of finding out more about some of the stuff that you can do with them who might be on this particular pathway?
Yeah. So I have different types of clients. The most common categories. First is you're ambitious, you're driven, you're generally a high achiever, and you feel a little bit stuck and lost about where to go. And often these people have a pretty well-developed persecutory inner voice that you're like, I should go and do that and I want to go do that.
Yeah.
It's like, but what happens if I fail and look like an idiot? And then you just keep like doing the status quo and you don't change and time passes.
Yeah.
That's one big category. I do another bunch of work with people that often from high expectation parent families, first generation migrants, where you got trained in the science of achievement And you're like, I go get this merit certificate, this other merit certificate, I get this degree, I do that. And it's supposed to lead to some magical fairy place that like suddenly at the end, you're like, wow, I feel like my life is amazing. And then you get there and you're like, my life is just the same, but I've traded off these years for stuff that I don't even know if I want. Yeah. There's that part. And then I do a lot of business coaching as well. Because when you actually look at business, a lot of it is mindset and clarity of strategic thought and ideas, both at the intersection of market and competitive advantage of what you can build in terms of product. Mm-hmm. And what a lot of people come to me for in trying to get clarity around their business, their strategy, what they're doing, and how do they drive either as a founder or a leader within the business. Often if you break it down to the root cause problem, it's something in terms of your thinking that's unclear and it needs to be broken down, and you need to see and recognize certain insights that then you can take in how you're a leader and also in terms of the market and the strategy for your business.
Yeah, great. And lastly then, for people here at CCIM, what are you hoping that people walk away from the conference with? There's some different streams, and there was of course the keynotes, and tomorrow as well, loads of value, loads of information to soak in over a weekend. What would you hope that people do with this information now?
I think that success in that way is an element of inspiration with a greater dose of action. And I think that what a lot of people, it's really nice. We do it on our smartphones all the time, right? They're like just addiction machines designed to take our engagement. And if you look at your screen time, you're like, wow, I've burnt hours, but I did nothing.
Yeah.
Right? So I think like learning without application, that's entertainment. Yeah. So what I hope people do now is they actually like, you know what? And it doesn't have to be big. It can be small. It's like, well, I really admire that person. I'd love to reach out to them in the DMs. Really one DM away from anyone in the world, anyone in healthcare, anyone in health tech, whatever it is. Oh, I really want to go and learn this particular skill. I actually take action around that. And these habits build over time.
Yeah.
And then you can bring that into your, you know, new operating system. And I think if people can take that and take some momentum and infuse that inspiration and action, that's success.
So I'm Robin Mann, and I'm here in Sydney today for the Creative Careers in Medicine Conference. I am the Director for Healthcare Consulting for Fujitsu across Australia and New Zealand, and based in New South Wales, but work obviously all over Australia and New Zealand with different clients.
Yeah. And look, I guess we're speaking about creative careers in medicine. Your career in healthcare has spanned a few things in healthcare and the technology side. So what excites you about coming to CCIM and engaging with your fellow colleagues?
Look, I think now, I've been working in digital health or e-health or health informatics or health IT for the last 20 years or so, with a medical background from the UK, as you know. I find it really inspiring to meet with doctors who are interested in doing things outside of the mainstream of medicine, and sharing some of those, you know, over the years, you don't really realize it, but you just pick up stuff, right?
Yeah.
You don't realize when you talk to people how useful some of that stuff might be, and it's quite difficult to distill it sometimes, but coming and having these conversations, you know, particularly over a weekend when it's not too, you know, not too stressed by other work targets and things like that, you create the space to have the conversations.
Yeah. And actually on that point too, something I'm realizing is that there's a lot of, particularly at anything CCIM, there's a lot of light bulbs that go off because they're on topics that people feel a little bit like, I'm a little bit alone in this feeling that I can't quite kind of define, that I've been on a particular path and now something's not clicking or vibing, or I feel like I need to be doing something else. And that feeling is difficult to then say, well, this is what I need to do. But I think even just being able to be amongst other people going through things that may be a little bit further ahead or tangential to what you're doing, that's got to be a good thing. So you're on a stage a couple of times, I think, over this weekend. Tell us a little about what you're sharing with the audience.
Well, there's two topics. So one is the role of consulting and healthcare. And I've worked for, apart from running the consulting practice for Fujitsu, which is obviously the tech company, and slightly different angle, I spent some time before working with BCG and also with KPMG for a good chunk of my career in Australia. And I can bring some sort of insights to people as to the way they work and the kind of work that you do and where the similarities are and some of the differences with medical practice. And I guess there's both to inspire people to think that there's something that is within their sights and some of the benefits you get from it, but also a bit of a reality check sometimes, because it's not always as envisaged. Much like medicine is, you know, you kind of learn medicine, you practice it, and then you discover that actually there's a lot going on there, which is not really what you originally thought. And I think that if you go in eyes wide open to that kind of environment, then you're much more likely to get something positive and valuable out of it. So the other topic is around the role of tech in healthcare today, and obviously that's a shared interest. Mm-hmm. And you know, it's a particularly exciting time at the moment with the recent sort of advances of artificial intelligence, there's large language models. Sure. But against the sort of backdrop of healthcare's inherent reticence to change, which is not necessarily a bad thing, because there are risks, and we don't want those risks to be passed on to patients. But so you know, views about how where there is a need for tech, I'll be talking about some of the challenges of getting tech actually implemented, and there's a lot of emphasis here on clinical entrepreneurship. If sure. I can say that word,
yeah,
a bit of a mouthful, which is a fantastic thing. But you also see many successes, but even more people that have started something and it is less successful. And so some of the sort of pointers that I think about when we're thinking about innovation in the healthcare space and what forms a great seeding ground to allow your innovation to sort of root and grow from there, as opposed to just sort of imagine that it's going to take off immediately.
Yeah, people would know that's a scenario I feel strongly that it doesn't matter if it's the best technology solution, a lot of the times the place where it all falls down is in that implementation side and the changing it from an idea to a reality and getting in the hands of clinicians. I'd actually be curious to dive into the consulting piece just really briefly for a second, because I guess in this space of being a clinician, that if there was a clinician attending here that's thinking about doing something, still seeing patients, but perhaps doing something on the side, you know, you don't have to spin up your own health tech startup or a company necessarily. There are clinicians that successfully go out and do consulting. I'm going to ask the dumb question. Like, what does a consultant actually do in that space in healthcare, though, at a high?
Yeah, I guess it's a really broad question and a really broad answer. So just trying to think of a way of answering it succinctly. So there are many different elements, I guess, that we're consulting. And there are different types of consulting company as well. So you could be independent consultant, where you just provide advice and you're basically selling your time and expertise because you've had some experience in the past, which is a value to somebody else. Move that in that kind of model into a slightly bigger organization, and then you'll be working with a team of people, and you could be doing anything from working with governmental policy, looking at some of the regulatory aspects of healthcare, things that need to change to make things improve things. You might be looking at program evaluations, you might be looking at program design in terms of government run programs. At a health service level, you may well be looking at developing the business case for a new IT system, or to fix a problem. We like to think about problem solving rather than IT systems implementation. But you might also be writing a strategy for them to set up, this is what they should do. And you can bring insights from around the world and connections. One of the big benefits of some of the larger organizations is that they do have people working all over the world. So you can draw from worldly experience and bring that to a particular client so that they don't have to do all that work themselves. Then you know, all the way through with on the IT space through to system implementation, change management, project management. You might be leading development of applications.
Yeah.
And with Fujitsu, which is one of the reasons why I joined them, they go all the way through to ongoing support and service management as well. So you can make sure that what's been implemented remains current and up to date, and you're always looking for ways to bring additional value to that investment that you've made in technology. My particular area of interest is around the data that we get from the systems and what you can do with that data and the insights you can get from that. And particularly then, once you've got an insight, how do you then push that insight back into the business, so that into the process, the clinical decision-making point in time where it's going to make an impact and get a better outcome for that patient.
Yeah.
So that's where I get nice. Particularly excited.
You did well to succinctly answer that, to be honest. But yeah, no, that's great. And lastly, then, with people attending either your consulting session or the session on, you know, the emerging role of technology, what would you hope people walk away from those sessions, or just generally from CCIM?
I think that I think it's actually written on here, actually. Ignite, inspire, invigorate. So. Yeah. For me, this type of event, and particularly CCIM, generates it inspires people to think differently. Some people might be stuck in a rut. Some people might be already doing a, you know, starting on a journey of moving out of a traditional path. Obviously, the two can work in parallel. Some people may have said goodbye to their traditional medical career and we do something completely different at this stage. And I think that just really sharing stories allows people to connect on an individual level. They may not want to talk to me afterwards. I'm sure they won't, but they might want to talk to others that have talked to me or just be inspired by something that I've said.
Yeah.
Obviously, I'm happy to talk to people and keep communicating. Mm. It's good to stay in touch and to see how people track.
So, yeah, amazing.
I'm hoping that people will be inspired.
Hey, thanks for sticking around to the end of this episode. If you made it this far, you're the perfect person that I want to hear from. Our THT Plus audience survey is now open until the end of June, and I personally read every submission. In fact, if you leave a comment in the survey that you heard this promotion in a podcast episode, I promise I'll reply directly to you by email with a personal note of thanks. And I'll even buy you a coffee next time I see you in person. It's pretty easy. Just go to talkinghealthtech.com/survey and have your say.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of Talking Health Tech. Make sure you like and subscribe and share this episode with someone who might find it valuable. For more information and resources about healthcare innovation, visit talkinghealthtech.com.